right now, 2011 is in full swing, but that doesn't mean we can't take a look back at what we thought 2010 was going to hold for Nashville's tech-inspired landscape. Record labels folding, convention centers rising, and our never-ending Cupertino fandom shines right through. And regardless of what Dave says, I was right about the iTablet. All this and more on episode 29 of the Nashville Tech Feed.
It's unbelievable.
To the Batmobile.
Like a crazy person.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
You're excited. You're feeling simple.
You have some mighty interesting people online.
No! Turn it on! Turn it back on!
Welcome to episode 29 of the Nashville Tech Feed, the show that pontificates on all sorts of tech news and things from Nashville and how it affects Music City. I'm David Baranja, your host. I'm an independent web designer and developer and self-proclaimed tech geek. This show has a website. You can find out more about it at NashvilleTechFeed.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 615-280-0505. We're also on Twitter and Facebook, but you can find out about that at our website. In episode 29, that's this one, we're going to review 2010 predictions and find out how awesomely right we are, or wrong. But first, let's meet our wonderful, awesome, cool, I guess you could call them co-hosts, guests. First, let me introduce Lucas Hendrickson. He's an independent journalist and instructor from Belmont University's Media Studies Department. He's also a head honcho at a lot of the tech events in Nashville, Bar Camp, Pod Camp. Welcome, Lucas.
Keep going. Greetings. Good to be back. Good to be here. Don't know that I'm necessarily a head honcho anywhere other than perhaps, behind this keyboard, but thanks anyway.
Well, you're Skyping in via your iPhone, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I seem to be having a boatload of technical difficulties tonight, so we're making do.
I'm glad to have you on and back somehow, since you technically are my co-host and always do the intro to the show because you write so wonderful. But moving along, let's meet our other guest, Paul Schatzkin. He is the founder of Cohesion Arts and all-around good guy as well. But he's a photographer extraordinaire. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, Dave. Thanks for inviting me. I think this week my job description is author between books and entrepreneur between startups.
You got a new book? You got a new book in the works?
No.
Oh.
That's why I'm between books. If I was working on another one, I wouldn't be between them.
Well, I'm looking forward to your next one.
It's like actor between jobs.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger just said he lost, what, $200 million because he was governor of California?
Yeah.
And
I'm sure I've lost at least that much.
I'm having a tough time feeling bad for him about that, though.
Yeah.
Get on the chopper.
I think the state of California probably would have said, you know what? I think it would have been better if you would have gone and made your $200 million. We might be in a better
but you got to pay
place
your taxes.
If you had done. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's at least he's gone. So let's go on to the show, which is our 2010 predictions. And all three of us were on that show. And that was actually our very first Skyped podcast. And it's been over a year now. So now I've got sound clips to see how right and wrong we are.
Okay, hurt us with our brilliance.
All right, first one.
Or apparently my lack thereof, but
on you.
Thank you. Thank you.
First one we're going to play is Paul Schatzkin. Convention center, is it going to happen?
I can't separate my prediction of that from my desire for it to not happen.
Wow.
So it's... I just don't see the need in a digitally mediated world to invest another $1 billion. Is it a billion or two? Are we up to a trillion yet on the convention center?
I think we're close, yeah.
So, Paul, convention center.
Well, I think I would revisit that and say that now that it is not a fait accompli but is in the process of becoming one, I'm less ill enamored of it. I was involved this year in the planning for the Leadership Music Digital Summit, and in the course of all of those deliberations, we started trying to look out into the future at the prospect of having an event in Nashville that over time would be a kind of a calendar counterpoint to what happens in Austin every March. And I think a convention center could be a big part of that. When you go downtown, you think of the convention center being adjacent to all the clubs on Broadway. I think there's potential for it. So despite my stated preference, in opposition to building another giant convention center, I'm looking back now and thinking it might be a good thing.
Are you feeling more warm and fuzzy about it?
I'm feeling warm and fuzzy about it, yes.
As warm and fuzzy as someone can be for a several hundred million dollar construction process that loses us more downtown parking. But other than that, yeah, he's good with it.
Yeah. Well, they're going to, you know, we won't need the parking because they're going to build a high speed rail system in and out of downtown. Right?
That's right.
That's the rest of the $1 trillion.
I forgot about that part of the story.
I thought we were going to have a monorail. Monorail.
If we could just, if we have the monorail from, just all the way straight down West End. Of course, it'd have to branch off six or seven different ways. But other than that, it would be, the perfect urban transportation.
I believe Starbucks is going to build it for us.
powered by the Trenta.
Trenta, the new Trenta, right?
All right, let's move on to our next prediction from last year, and for people out there listening, quite a few were from Paul. He actually said, and I don't know if I got this or not, that you don't want to like to make predictions, but then you ended up making the most through that episode, which was fascinating. Mm-hmm. So the next one, here we go.
I think that we're going to continue to see consolidation in the music industry. I think that the ground continues to shift, and there's a stage in earthquake tectology called liquefaction, when the ground turns into liquid. And I don't think the ground under the music industry has yet to reach the liquefaction stage.
No, I agree.
You see because a collapse of a label? So are we still in liquefaction, Paul?
I believe so. I really do think that we're still in the early stages of a kind of a cultural shift that we're still not fully cognizant of. I mean, if you were, I think the period that we're in now is an analogous some ways to what transpired 100 years ago. And if you were standing in 1910 or 1911 and imagining what the music industry was going to look go by 1985 or something like that, you would have had no way to predict what that transformation would be like. And I think we're at a similar transition now.
Well, we won't even be able to tell what the music industry is going to look like 3 years from now. So yeah, the change happens so rapidly. I'm always called to revisit what my views on this are almost every semester as I get ready to teach another mass media and society class in trying to realize where these 18 through 22 year olds, where their consumption habits are, what they're used to getting to and listening to their music on. And it's completely different than, when I started teaching that class 7 years ago. So there's no way to predict what it's going to look like in the future.
Well, let me ask you this question, Lucas, because maybe you have a better perspective on it than I do because you're in contact with that generation. But are they listening more to the diminishing number of high-value, big marquee name acts like Lady Gaga and the Black Eyed Peas? Are they listening to more of that, or are they listening to more local, lower, not different scale? Are they listening to more on a different scale, or are they just consuming what's left that the mass media is pushing on them?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. I think you're seeing more of an adoption of the catalog acts that are out there. You're seeing a resurgence in an interest in classic rock and other things like that. But at the same time, there's a lot there's way more of a, you know, pockets of interest as opposed to if that makes any sense. Very, you know, if I'm teaching a class of 30 students, very few of them all have one or two artists that they kind of mostly all will have in common. The niches are manifesting themselves much more vibrantly, and so some of them are into the local scene. Some of them are into indie, you know, and vinyl and things from outside of Nashville. Some are into mainstream country, and some are into the pop, you know, be it Lady Gaga or the Glee kids. You know, you're just not seeing as much of an overall adoption of a number of superstars that permeate through an entire class like that because there are fewer of those superstars to be had.
Well, that sort of reinforces the notion that I continue to carry, which is I think that what's happening with the shift. I think the use of the word music industry is becoming obsolete. It's not an industry anymore. And the expectation that music is something that other people do for us is what's beginning to dissolve. And you can't maintain an industry where everybody is doing it for themselves.
I would agree with that. It's a situation that always makes me wonder about – again, the casual fan versus the active fan. The casual fan that could become a very active music fan if they had a broader access to easily available, and that easily available meaning somehow promoted to them versus them having to go search it out. That kind of music that could develop their fandom going forward. Instead, they're just gonna, you know, they're gonna redirect their time and their efforts and whatever money they are gonna spend on their entertainment consumption doing something else, be it video games or streaming video or you know some other form that music would have taken its place in a previous generation.
Yeah, the question I have is, are people, instead of buying CDs, are they buying instruments and strings?
I think a handful are, but not nearly as many as we're buying CDs. Mm. You know? So
you also got to take in consideration the way it was that at one time a small percentage of the people were buying a good chunk of the CDs versus the casual buying. For example, what they're saying was like, I heard today that on the mobile phone networks, you have 10% of the people using up 40% of the bandwidth for video.
Sure.
You know, and it's just the way, I just think it's getting diversified and splintered so much that it's going to be harder and harder for somebody to stand out. Let's switch back into our predictions, though.
Well, now, I said before you go to the next one, you ended that last clip by asking if a label would fold.
Hold on, that's the next clip.
Okay, good.
Sorry. I was trying to cut these as quickly as possible, so here's the next one. I can't find that one. I'm sorry, Paul, but yes, you had asked about a major label.
You had asked, would a label collapse?
Yeah, and I actually pulled that
clip. We talked a little bit, I think, about Lyric Street. If memory serves me, Lyric Street, which was was that Disney's label?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That folded, didn't it?
It's gone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gone.
Hold on. Here it is. Like a collapse of majors or?
Yeah, I don't like to make predictions because, you know, the only prediction you can really make is that whatever predictions you make, everything will change before you get there. But yeah, I think we'll see. I'll predict that we'll see at least one of the major labels in Nashville close their Nashville office.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
Who's the one that's doing the worst right now? So you think we kind of hit that one with Lyric Street?
Certainly, in terms of Nashville, yeah. I don't know if Lyric Street qualifies as a major, because I think when we speak of majors, we're talking about, you know, the four conglomerates that are left mm-hmm. now, which is Sony BMG, Warner, Universal, and EMI. And that last one is pretty much on the bubble right now because EMI is on the verge of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
What it has been all year.
What deal did they just do for streaming? Didn't they do some deal?
They did a Pink Floyd deal. To be able to sell those tracks as digital singles. Be able to, because the band had steadfastly refused to break up those classic albums. But yeah, you know, the funny thing is EMI is making its headlines by regurgitating their onerous deals with existing or catalog bands, i.e. the Beatles and Pink Floyd, and aren't really even moving the needle all that much on any sort of new music. So yes, they are seemingly always teetering on the brink of destruction. But then again, so are the rest of them. So, you know, it's funny. You'll see from my experience with, those infrastructures, for good or ill, are crumbling. You've got tremendous talent, both from an artist standpoint and from an industry standpoint, leaving those arenas and pardon me, trying to figure out how to make their way in this new age. And nothing's really, you know, nothing again moving the needle. The nominally the biggest music story coming out of this town in a long time is Taylor Swift, and she's on an indie. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next prediction here. Or, Paul, I think this sounds familiar. Here we go.
I only have one other prediction for you, Dave, and that is that I will buy a new iPhone just before Apple announces the next one.
So did that happen?
Well, I'm pleased to say that that's one prediction that did not bear fruit.
Nice.
I managed to hold out until the iPhone 4 was announced. and then I went down there and I got it the day it was released. And I spent the equivalent of about 4 hours online. No, longer than that. I guess it was about 4 hours.
No, wait, was that... That was the cheeseburgers in
that
the
was
line.
The cheeseburger line. Day,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Because you had your iPad delivered to you. That's what that was.
The iPad was delivered, right? Brown truck.
That's right. I remember the tweet midday on that Saturday. The brown truck is around the corner.
I don't know, Dave. Do you want to go on to Lucas's prediction about the iTablet?
Yeah, we'll save that for last.
Perfect segue there, dude. What are you talking about? You could have thrown me under the bus right there.
No, I'm waiting. I'm waiting.
Oh, gee, thanks. What a plug.
This time I was in sync with the technology, and I like the iPhone 4 very much. It's a much better device than I had an iPhone 3, the 3G, did not have the 3GS, and this one is a full order of magnitude better than that one.
Just if you don't hold it correctly.
I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I mean, I never make phone calls with it anyway.
That's true.
Yeah. So let's throw in a 2011 prediction right here.
Didn't we do that last show?
I'm sorry?
Didn't we do that the last show?
Kind of, but this one ties into our to all of our love of Apple gadgets.
Okay.
Will Steve Jobs still be the CEO of Apple this time next year?
Oh.
Ooh.
I say yes.
Paul. It's a tough subject, guys.
It is a tough subject.
Yeah, here's what I would like to. I don't want to answer that specific question because the answer that I have for it is more grave than that
sure.
That question implies. I think that the medical leave that Steve Jobs is on now is probably more of an issue for he and his family than it is for his company. I think that Apple is poised now to be able to go on indefinitely with or without Steve Jobs. And I think the interesting corollary here is that I'm tempted to compare Apple in its current zenith with the Walt Disney Company. If ever there was an industrial era media company that was identified with its founder, it was the Walt Disney Company. And the Walt Disney Company is still with us 40 years after Walt left us.
Yeah.
And the irony here, of course, is do you know who is the largest shareholder in the Walt Disney Company?
That would be Steve Jobs.
That would be Steve Jobs. But so
it's maybe equal amount of danger for the Disney Company as it is for Apple. Should things not go well, unfortunately.
Except that Disney already has a track record of surviving in the absence of its founder.
But you also have to admit that they were able to kind of regain their footing, certainly in the animation business, due to his pushing behind the scenes and not so much of Pixar and that relationship with Disney as well. So, you know, again, you look at the guy and his impact on so many of these, you know, consumer entertainment consumption content issues and content devices. It's staggering when you.
Maybe that was a bad example, Lucas. Maybe Steve leaves us and he takes them both down.
We're recording this on the day that the first day that the stock market was open after that announcement. The stock only lost 2.25%, which is a lot, a lot less of a loss than I think anybody could have possibly predicted.
Yeah.
I think from a PR standpoint, they timed the announcement well. They timed it on the weekend leading into a holiday day that the markets were closed, and they're managing it well. They've put what is his name, Tim Cook, the COO, brought him forward and said, this is the guy. So yeah, they are positioning the company in the best way possible to soldier on and all good wishes and things to our buddy Steve, because he's had a tremendous impact on all the stuff that we're attempting to do.
Yeah, right. Well, so. I walk around every day with what Jackson Miller calls the Apple Trinity. I have my MacBook, my iPad, my iPhone, I have all three of them right here in front of me, even as we speak. And so, yeah, it's a huge part of my life.
Yeah. We also have to take in consideration that they announced today that their fourth quarter revenue was 70% over last year.
Sure.
So that took a big sting out of it. I mean, it's all about the PR, but let's get back on to our review of last year's predictions. Let's go into Lucas talking about the music industry.
Does Lyric Street get out?
So who was right?
that was it.
That was it.
They didn't make it out of the year. That's for sure.
Yep.
The cash cow that is Rascal Flatts and their 80 different songwriters that they honored last year.
Well, now what was the story there? Did Rascal Flatts finish their contract with Lyric Street, and so Lyric Street?
No, I'm sorry. They went
left?
To. Yeah.
Yeah, their contract.
Yeah,
was
pretty
up.
Much.
Actually, here's
no. They're not with Universal. They went with Big Machine as well. So they are they're in the house that Taylor built as well. They went from the Mouse House to the Taylor House.
And this next clip will say something to that extent, I believe.
Well, I don't see them renewing with Lyric Street. I see them going out on their own and either starting their own label and getting distribution.
Yeah.
But I don't see them staying with Lyric Street once their contract's done.
Which is what happened. So the one prediction I made, I got correct.
The Oracle of Nashville.
What can I say?
He was one for one, when you step up to the plate and knock the home run, hit the game winning RBI, then there you
go. Quit while you're ahead.
That's right. That's
as opposed to you and I, who basically just keep going and going and going.
I went to see a Braves game several years ago where the Yankees were playing in an interleague game, and the pitcher David Wells had his first at-bat of the season because he was a Yankee and he played in the designated hitter league. And so the first time he was at bat, he actually got a hit.
That's right.
And the next time he came to the plate, his average was 1,000.
So I'm batting 1,000, buddies.
You're batting 1,000.
Of course, I think I made predictions last week, so that might come to an end very quickly. Of course, I have to wait 365 days to find out if I'm wrong. So let's move on to I saved the best for last. And that is Lucas, speaking of what we...
Yeah, throw a little context, though, okay. On this.
Would you, how do you want me to throw the context, or would you like to do it?
Well, I believe we were, you know, knee deep in the hype of last year's CES, and everybody wondering, you know, what Apple was going to do, if they were going to do anything at all, and then I believe I said something along the lines of,
"You know what I feel like won't come along? The iTablet."
And
did I say anything more after that? Well, the iTablet didn't come along. The iPad certainly did, and you know,
splitting hairs
wreaked havoc on you know every one of those you know tablet makers and ebook reader manufacturers that showed a bunch of stuff at CES, but a lot of it never even saw the light of day. But in retrospect, they all kind of took a step back. Figured out what version of Android they could use to put on their hardware, and have you know refurbished that stuff for this year's CES. I was amazed in watching the coverage to see how many different kinds of you know tablet computing devices came out of that. And again, it goes back to that to Apple's first best business model in creating. You know, creating a segment of a consumer computing product before we even know we want it. And that's exactly what they did with the iPad.
Oh,
I knew I wanted it.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, you know, the 7.8 million people that bought the things last year, I got to think that more than half of them didn't even realize that's what they wanted out of that kind of device.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my significant other.
When we talked about it last year, I described the experience I was having at the time, where I was using the Kindle, and reading the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal on the Kindle, and then getting my RSS feeds on my iPhone, and I was actually getting to the point where I was actually spending more time reading stuff on my iPhone than I was on the Kindle, and I was missing all the interactive qualities that the iPhone mm-hmm. had. So I was just waiting for the marriage of those two devices, and like I said, you know, when the brown truck showed up, it was that moment, and this thing has been just indispensable ever since.
Speaking of which, what are you still using your Kindle?
No,
it's sitting gathering dust.
I am saving the Kindle. I've started to put it on eBay a couple of times in the, 10 months or so since I've had the iPad. And I've started to put it on eBay a number of times and just decided not to, because the one quality that it has that the iPad doesn't have is a much longer battery life. Mm-hmm. And I think if I were ever to go on an extended trip, I would want to have some of the reading material that I've got on the iPad on the Kindle. So that if I get stuck on the tarmac for 8 hours, I've got plenty of stuff to read.
Do you care that the iPad you can't read in the sunlight? Is that another reason you're keeping the Kindle?
I haven't really had a problem with that.
Really?
Okay. I have not. I cannot think of a situation where I have not been able to read the iPad.
Paul's a photographer, so he knows how to not only use light, but block light from what from what he's trying to view at the time.
Well, Lucas, let me play one more clip that'll redeem your for a little redemption.
But I'm using reverse psychology on this. It's not going to happen. Henceforth, we'll see it, you know, coming out of CES maybe.
So you were all doing the reverse psychology. So you were right.
Exactly.
See?
Sure.
See?
I ended up being right,
all right
for
so
once.
Let's go into iPad 2 real quick, since we're already in speculation mode. iPad 2. What do you guys think? Is it coming out?
It certainly seems it. I mean, there's so much in the rumor mill now as there was this time last year about the original iPad, that I'm reasonably certain that the features that are being described are probably real. The dual processor, in order to have the Retina display functional, an SD card slot, and at least a forward-facing. I don't see that much use for a rear-facing camera, mm-hmm. but I can see where if you have this thing in your lap and you wanted to have a FaceTime conversation with somebody, the forward-facing camera would be useful for that. I don't know that the new one is going to have so much more utility from the way that I use it that I would need to run right out and buy one. But there is the prospect of placing an iPad-type device in the kitchen that we're going to remodel. So there may be a new one in the future after all.
I wonder if we're going to get to a point where we're going to see iPads and tablets in general subsidized like phones are with different phone companies, with different
the
carriers.
Galaxy S is subsidized.
Right, right. But is that going to fall under, T-Mobile's or whomever's, 2-year update plan the same way that handsets are? I don't think the iPad will ever be that kind of situation.
In the UK, it is. You can buy an iPad with a mobile connection subsidized through, I think, Orange or O2. One of the carriers in the UK, you can actually buy one subsidized.
Watch this. I'm gonna set the professor's ears ablaze right now. Yeah, but they have Spotify over there, and we don't. So.
So do you think that Spotify is a factor in the way that mobile services is delivered?
Hey, that we don't hear.
Lucas, you still there?
Yeah, sorry. It was pinging my cell tower. No, I was just saying that because of what they do have over in the UK that we don't tend to have over here through lack of foresight or onerous contracts, one or the other. No, again, Spotify is probably worth its own show. I was going to go off on a
yeah,
on a
yeah.
Yeah, why don't we?
I have a related question that's worth thinking about, and that is: have we seen the end of unlimited data plans? Are we going to start paying by the bit?
Unfortunately, yes.
That's one reason why I'm not certain that there is a new wireless mobile iPad in my future, because I got my 3G iPad while I could still get the unlimited service.
I think you're going to see more caps like that.
Yeah.
And I think you'll see certainly from an AT&T standpoint, and it's going to be very interesting to see what Verizon does end up doing, what they end up calling unlimited. You're going to see a lot of people hanging on to their grandfathered AT&T contracts for those things. I don't think we will get to a point where we're paying by the bit, much the same way I don't think we'll ever get to an a la carte, cable TV delivery system either. It's just the bundle is too important to these companies. I think it's going to continue to be a redefinition of what is unlimited or what can, the average consumer consume through those devices from a data standpoint. And, it'll be the upper reaches of that. So, I mean, I'd be interested to see since that, announcement of the shifting of the AT&T plans, how many people do through their mobile devices eat up that 5 gigs per month. I'd venture to say that it's not very many. But that's just a gut feeling.
I don't even keep track of it.
Yeah.
Well,
and mainly because the tools are so inaccurate for one to try to do that. The gauge on the phone is not indicative of what the actual usage is. And if you got to get out of that, go sign into your AT&T account online, and maybe that that gauge will be close to being accurate as well. People probably just think it's too much of a hassle to try to figure out how much of their data plan they're actually eating up every month.
I think with the 4G, it's going to cause issues because Verizon was touting the LTE network. But right. If you use the full capacity, somebody was saying you could burn through your, was it 2.5 gig or 3 gig cap in 32 minutes?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, great.
So the idea is more bandwidth available to you, and I think they're going to have to raise the caps because they're all going to caps right now. If you change your plan on the, I've got the unlimited, but if you change your plan on an iPhone or you get a new one, you're capped at, was it 2 gig? 2.5? I don't know.
No, what you get with
the bottom,
you know, the $15 plan, I think is what, 2 gigs, and then the $25 plan, which is 5 gigs.
Is it 5? I thought it was only 2. I thought they cut way back because I thought that the unlimited was technically only 5 gig. But you know what? This is for another show. Why don't we move on to our what we're consuming section?
Okay.
Because we could babble on and on about how awesome our Apple products are and how much the carriers suck. So, we have what we're consuming, which pretty much is, for the people out there, if you're a new listener to the show, it's we're sharing what we've been reading, watching, listening to, pretty much any type of media that we're consuming. So who would like to go first? Mr. Paul, how about you?
Well, I have a new book on my book stand here. It's called The Strangest Man. It is the hidden life of Paul Dirac, the mystic of the atom. This is a biography of a quantum mechanics physicist from, the 1920s and 30s. And so I was just given that as a birthday gift, and I'm starting to read it. And the rest of my media consumption these days is various different programs on HGTV. Ann and I are getting ready to do some construction around our house, and so we're getting all the ideas we can to make sure we get everything in it that we want. So that's pretty much what I'm consuming these days.
What was I going to say? They just today announced, I think it was on Wired or via Wired, that they figured out through quantum mechanics on how to do time travel through through quantum physics with particles. That if you change a particle now, in the future,
I was following some of that stuff a while back. The one other thing I'll add to that is I have been listening to my Bill Frisell channel on Pandora a lot.
Ooh,
can you share that? Is there a way you can share that on Pandora? I mean, on the website itself for our listeners?
Yeah, actually, I can get a URL for that.
Why don't you put that in the show notes so anybody else that's interested, you can check out that channel.
Okay.
Lucas, what are you consuming lately, my friend?
Well, I took... I took some inadvertent direction and serendipity guided me along with that as well. But I am about 60 pages into a book called The Wordy Shipmates by Sarah Vowell, who the professor talked about last time we gathered for this. Except I'm actually setting eyes upon the page as opposed to listening to an audio book, which would be equally fascinating. I feel quite certain she has a very interesting voice, both tonally and word choice wise. But it's basically taking a look at the puritanical beginnings of our country through the eyes of a couple of different mid 17th century writers via a nasally New Yorker originally from Oklahoma. She's great. So that book is thus far very, very, very cool. It's one of those things where it's not divided into chapters. So you go, okay, I'm really enjoying this, but I got to go do some other things. I'll just get to the end of this chapter, and it just keeps going and going, and you realize, oh, I just have to find a place to stop. And it's a little tough to do, but so far a fascinating read.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad.
And then the other thing, I broke down, and much to my own chagrin, and have put it in the room in the house that I'm in the least. But I did break down and buy a Roku box, and have been going through things on my Netflix instant queue, as well as loading up a number of different channels, including techpodcast.com,
which has a channel on the Roku box, as well as you know, in their audio section under Tech Chats, they have all the episodes of the Nashville Tech Feed.
Well, thank you for that plug, Lucas. Now I don't have to do that.
So it was odd to, you know, click through to that and hear my own voice coming out of my TV screen. But yeah, so there's all kinds of fascinating content in the Roku universe, and I've kind of been speeding around the dial on that for the past few days.
That's a whole nother episode I could get into. We might have to schedule that next time, about the boxes versus the TV manufacturers versus the cable providers. Who is now the gatekeeper of programming?
I just thought of a couple other things. As long as we're talking about television shows, Californication has just started.
I love that show.
Big Love started last night. We just finished the first season of Boardwalk Empire on HBO. And there's a new program on, I think it's Showtime, called Episodes with Matt LeBlanc. And we started watching that one recently.
We'll make sure you put those on the notes. Let me share. What, Lucas, do you got anything else, or did I cut you off?
No, that pretty much covers my free time, or my lack thereof.
What I am consuming is I'm very boring. SQL Quick Start Guide by Chris Fenley. Pretty much I'm working on a project where I'm doing some SQL Server stuff, so I need to know some of that SQL language. Exciting, huh? The other thing is Instagram for the iPhone, and it is coming out for the Android very soon. It is almost like a Twitter for photo sharing. And it allows you to take pictures and do a bunch of filters, and it's quite addictive, I have to say.
I just moved Instagram into the place where my camera app was on my iPhone. So when I get the urge to take a photo, which isn't all that often, I will actually do it through Instagram and throw the filters on it and send it up that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have Instagram on my phone, but I haven't quite integrated it into my daily travels.
I usually take a picture with my regular phone, and then I go into Instagram, and so you can add a filter. Because if you take it with the Instagram, it just saves it as that filter. And I kind of like to have both types of pictures.
Yeah.
And then the final thing I have, which is, this is like another uber geek thing, it is called Blueprint Lite, and this is for the iPad. And it allows you to pretty much mock up an entire iPhone or iPad app, where you can go live on the screen, and pretty much, I'm in the process of developing an iPad app.
Oh, cool.
And I'm mocking the whole entire app up first, and then I'm going to take it to the developers and see how much it costs to build it. So hopefully in the future, I will be pitching my iPad app. So those are the things I'm consuming. And to end the show, we don't have to talk about tech podcasts because Lucas brilliantly did a segue or snuck it in there. Is that called product placement?
Sure. Yeah, because we need all the downloads and listens we can get out of that, because you know we make so much money off of that relationship as well.
In fact, we're actually taking a survey of our listeners, and if you'd like to participate, it helps us learn more about you. So no matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you've listened to the show, please take a few minutes and visit our website at nashvilletechfeed.com/survey, and you'll find a listener survey. It takes you right to it. It'll take you a few minutes to fill out. It's completely anonymous, and it helps us on the show. And that didn't sound scripted at all, did it?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
If you want to leave a comment for the Nashville Tech Feed, it's 615-280-0505. You can email us at comments@nashvillefeed.com, Nashville Feed on Twitter, and that's all. So, Paul, where can we find you online?
CohesionArts.com.
Lucas, where can we find you online?
Oh, so many places these days. The blog is www.largelandmammal.com. The Twitter feed, as was edited today, as I'm kind of no longer all that affiliated with the company with through whom I started that, the feed is now called.
Oh, we lost you.
Answering that. Oops, no, sorry.
All right, answering, start over.
Answering the age old question, what do I do for a living? The answer comes back, Lucas types. So that is the new Twitter handle for me.
Very nice, very nice. Well, I'm David Baranja, and you can find me at NashvilleTechFeed.com. I go by MDave on Twitter. And Lucas, how are we going to end the show?
As per usual, I have absolutely no idea.
Maybe I should just play this.
You know what I feel like won't come along? The iTablet.